and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, liter by liter, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John. And I guess we are, well, we're not diving into...
We would never.
No.
We would never dive into that cistern. That is a sacred place.
But there are many upon many decaliters.
Yes. We're back, man. Happy Monday.
It's a new week.
It's a new week. It is just mere moments for us in recording land. Maybe an hour.
But yeah, we are back, and we have more Dune to talk about. We have a lot of Dune to talk about this week. So I think let's just dive right on in. As we left off last week, we ended the week discovering the Cistern of Souls.
Mm-hmm.
Just how much water was in there with all of our fun conversions that we did.
If you forgot, I think the most important one out of all of them was the Big Mac conversion.
Yeah, the 1 billion.
1,583,333,333.3 uncooked Big Macs worth of water. Or I guess, which is more relevant, about 9.5 million people's worth of water.
Yeah, yeah. James's being the most recent addition to this cistern here.
Yep.
And we're starting this minute off. Jessica is kind of beginning to put two and two together in her mind and realizing that there are so many souls.
Yeah, she does her quick mental maths, yep, and says so many souls. This is right after Stilgar says, we have thousands of such places.
Thousands of such places, and the Lizan al-Gaib will use this water to restore a green paradise. A dream, if you will, of a green Arrakis.
Yeah, let's spend a little bit of time talking about this.
Yeah, and we talked about it a little bit during season one, but I think it's worth reiterating for the new season to just kind of reestablish what this is all about.
Yeah. The dream of a green Arrakis is something that was started by Pardo Kynes, which is Liet Kynes' father.
Yep.
Liet Kynes, of course, was the planetologist, the imperial planetologist that we got to know in the last movie. You know, equal parts geologist, meteorologist, botanist, all sorts of things. Any kind of field that you can think of that could bring a dead planet alive.
Yep.
That's what they were focused on. Specifically with Arrakis, they wanted to turn it into a lush green paradise. Part of this process was apparently the Fremen hoarding water.
Millions upon millions upon millions of gallons.
Absolute fuck ton of water. I have a passage from the book, and it's, again, a slightly long passage, but it gives a good explanation of what is happening and what it means to the Fremen in this moment.
By all means.
It has been calculated with precision, Stilgar whispered. We know to within a million decaliters how much we need. When we have it, we shall change the face of Arrakis. A hushed whisper of responses lifted from the troop. Bilal Kaifa. We will trap the dunes beneath grass plantings, Stilgar said, his voice growing stronger. We will tie the water into the soil with trees and undergrowth. Bilal Kaifa, intoned the troop. Each year the polar ice retreats, Stilgar said. Bilal Kaifa, they chanted. They'll repeat that. I'm going to stop saying
it.
We shall make a home world of Arrakis with melting lenses at the poles, with lakes in the temperate zones, and only the deep desert for the maker and his spice. And no man shall ever want for water. It shall be for his dipping and well or pond or lake or canal. It shall run through the quants and feed our plants. It shall be there for any man to take. It shall be his for holding out his hand. So that is the dream of a green Arrakis. That is exactly what they plan to use this water for and why it has such importance to them.
Sure. In a sense, it's an afterlife with meaning for every Fremen that has passed on. They still contribute to this dream.
Yeah.
And, you know, as Jessica is doing this mental math, realizing how many people have died and contributed to just this one cistern,
mm-hmm,
we begin to see that she starts to shed a tear.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a Art and Soul, at least confirms the pronunciation and meaning. Ats, ats, ats from Stilgar, which is no, no, no.
He's not talking about the predominantly New England chip brand?
No.
Ats, ats, ats.
Ats, ats, ats. Utz makes good chips.
Hell yeah, those are good chips.
But no, it's Utz, Utz, Utz. No, no, no. And he thumbs the tear and drinks it for himself, basically explaining to Jessica, you do not shed a tear. You do not waste any water, not even for the dead, which is in direct contradiction to what we just talked about a couple episodes on last week.
Where Paul cries for Jameis and they see it as a sign of utmost like reverence and respect. Yeah.
Yep. And I get it from like the continuity of water discipline side of things, but the inconsistencies with tradition and lore, I don't know. I feel like
you're talking about like from the movie to the books or.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It bothers me a little bit, but I also understand that because they don't have the, I was a friend of Jameis scene.
Yeah.
They have to stay consistent with everything that we've seen in the last 15 or 20 minutes or so, which was you have to maintain every drop of water that you can.
Yeah, exactly. The, you know, going back to the getting sick in the desert to this, that there is that internal consistency.
Yeah.
And I think we've said it on the, or at least I talked about it. I know, I think we both shared the sentiment though. Changing things from the source material is generally fine as long as it adheres to or it checks off two boxes for me. One, that it makes sense within the overall story, and two, that it's consistent within itself.
And in this case, it is.
It is. So this change is fine.
I can't be too upset about it.
Yeah.
It just, it still irks me just enough to like want to have to bring it up.
Yeah. Also, it's a little gross and creepy that Stilgar just drinks Jessica's tear, but hey, whatever.
Well, you know. Is it creepier if he does that or if he then like thumbs it and like puts his thumb in her mouth? I think it's creepier if he does that. So
yeah, no, you're right. both are weird.
Yeah, they're both. I'm not saying either of them are okay to do, but
maybe
if it was a situation where you and I were in that, I would much rather you consume my tear than take your fucking dirty ass thumb and stick it in my mouth with a tear on it.
No, I'm not drinking your gross ass tears, dude.
Yeah.
How about tell her to wipe it off and drink it?
I don't know.
That's the better response. She does not even mention or really react to the tear drinking moment.
Yeah.
Instead, she just asks why Stilgar is showing her all of this. And we really kind of get to the crux of their conversation here.
Very quickly.
Very quickly. I mean,
there's no fluff.
There's no fluff. They do not mince words really much, the Fremen. So they're fine, straight at the point. I appreciate it. I respect it, even. He says, because you're Bene Gesserit and you understand the prophecy. He goes on to explain exactly what he means. The mother of Lisan al Ghaib will be a reverend mother, and our reverend mother is dying.
Oh, so convenient.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Jessica then asks, you want me to take her place? And he says, yes. And that's a clean break, actually, to the minute.
It is a nice clean break.
Yeah.
We're not done with the conversation.
No, absolutely
but not. But we're at least not mid-sentence.
Yep. So for book notes, or do you have anything from Martin Soul related to this one?
Nothing that we haven't already talked about.
Gotcha. So I got another book passage that I wanted to read. We talked about it a good bit already, but you know, the tear shedding happened different in the books. As in the Friend of Jameis scene, Paul sheds tears. They took it as a sign of respect. Yada, yada, yada.
Yep. I'm just imagining George Costanza explaining to
you. Can't, you can't yada, yada, yada. What's the deal with these Harkonnens? So the passage from the book that really dives into how Jessica is feeling in this moment. So this is picking up from when she is seeing the reaction to people when Paul is crying for Jameis.
Sure.
That part in the book happens a little bit after they see the cistern. So it's not a complete analogy.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't the first time we've had to kind of bounce around passages and stuff either. So
the passage goes, Jessica felt the religious ritual in the words and noted her own instinctively awed response. They're in league with the future, she thought. They have their mountains to climb, and this is the scientist's dream. And these simple people, these peasants, are filled with it. First off, chill, Jessica.
First of all, fucking rude.
Yeah.
Bitch lives in a castle for like 15 years and then she's like, oh, fuck this trash.
Yeah. All right, getting back into it.
Racist.
Classist. Her thoughts turned to Liatkynes, the Emperor's planetary ecologist, the man who had gone native. She wondered at him. This was a dream to capture men's souls, and she could sense the hand of the ecologist in it. This was a dream for which men would die willingly. It was another one of the essential ingredients that she felt her son needed, people with a goal. Such people would be easy to imbue with fervor and fanaticism. They could be wielded like a sword to win back Paul's place for him. So she understands the importance of the cistern, the dream of a green Arrakis, and immediately she turns to exploiting it.
Yeah.
Just because, absolutely immediately.
Because that's what the Bene Gesserit do best.
Yep. It's crazy. I mean, this is not a subtext in the book at all. This is this is like the hit you in the face message of the book. But it's a stark difference from how we are seeing them portrayed on screen. Mm-hmm. Except for what Paul said in the cafeteria earlier. That was a very direct, I can exploit this.
I must convert the non-believers.
Exactly. Yep.
The only way that I'll get to the Emperor is through disruption of spice.
Yep. So,
which really is getting to the guild, and then the guild has...
We'll get there. So maybe Jessica feels a little bit more reticent to go down that path than Paul does. Again, she's not out for revenge.
Sure.
But Paul sure as hell is.
Paul definitely is, and Paul also knows the future, and he knows what he must do.
Yeah.
Like, yes, he's being, you know, very opportunistic, but he's only being opportunistic because he knows that the only way that he will succeed is to follow very specific steps, which he has seen in his own mind's eye.
Well, I'll disagree with that just for a little bit later. So that'll be some foreshadowing into some future episodes this week. So how about we get to them? I'm done with notes on this side. What about yours?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's meet back up tomorrow. We are on all the socials. We're on Blue Sky at DoomMinute.com. We are Gmail, DoomMinute@gmail.com, YouTube, all sorts of stuff. Get in touch with us if you care to reach out. And we will be back tomorrow
with another episode of the Doom Minute Podcast.
That's right. See you then.
See ya.